Hello, Guardians, and welcome to the Destiny Show podcast. Tonight on the Destiny Show, we return with a wrestling superstar. The wrestling world calls him Drama King Matt. He is a distinguished wrestler, actor, color commentator, and content creator who loves Destiny 2. Matt is a former WWE superstar, NXT tag team champion, and current Impact Wrestling superstar. Matt began his professional wrestling career in 2011, training under several notable individuals like Norman Smiley. He competed in various independent promotions before signing with the WWE in 2012. Matt debuted for FCW in 2012, and then Drama King Matt came to life, debuting in NXT in 2013. Matt was also a former tag team champion with Simon, forming the Vaudevillains. The team also became the NXT Tag Team Champions. And we're so, so excited to share his amazing journey. Matt, thank you so, so much for joining us tonight.
No, absolutely. Thank you for having me. This is no shade to the wrestling world. I love all of you out there, but I've done about 8 billion wrestling podcasts. And so like whenever I get a chance to do something in a podcast or a show where I can like nerd out about other things as well as wrestling, it's just such a cool thing because I'm not a monolith like most of us. And I enjoy many things. And this, you know, is just one that I'm super passionate about.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, I feel like right now we're at a point in Destiny where things are really getting exciting and fun. I think Bungie is really starting to take shape with where the game is going. The roadmap is exciting, and I'm so excited. Season 21 is coming next month. We're going to talk a little bit about that. We have some news from Bungie, and we're going to get to know Matt a little bit more on the show tonight. We have a lot of questions for you, Matt, and we're going to invite you on the hot seat for our discussion with the Guardians. So I hope you're ready.
Oh, absolutely. Bring it on, baby.
So first question we got for you. How'd you get started in Destiny as a Guardian? I know we briefly talked about it earlier, but I'm curious to share with our Guardians. How'd you get your start?
Yeah. I'm still kind of like a new light. I'd like to think, you know, I've got some stuff under my belt. So, not so much. I don't know. It's so weird, but I feel like I'm still a little bit of a baby here. I started playing full stop, outside of like a little, after I went free to play, trying it, I'm like, I'll try it. But like a lot of people, and I think this has been an issue for many, the new player experience is overwhelming. And at first I was like, I don't know this, there's a lot to comprehend. I'm going to go back to Overwatch. I met some other friends who were into the scene and everything like that, into the community. And they were like, just here, give it another try. Like I'll play through like Witch Queen with you. And then I'm like, I have a friend, shout out to the Bread Clan and my friend Patrick, who kind of chirped me just into the game. And so I remember I watched the state of the game or whatever last year, in August of 2022, and the big Vidoc update and everything like that, with the previews for Lightfall and heading into the final seasons of the year and all that stuff. And I was like, this looks cool. Like I love that. I'm like their community engagement and everything like that. And so I was like, all right, I'll give this another go. And so I did that. And so started right at the beginning of Season of Plunder, which to a lot of veterans was like, oof, you picked that one to start. Okay. I got hooked real quick. Thanks to some good friends, and just as you all out there know, that the depth of storytelling and character and lore, I am a bit of a lore geek. And so there's so much to sink your teeth in. And this is something about me that has been carried over throughout my whole life. This is what happened with wrestling. This is what happened with one or two other hobbies of mine. I get into it and I can't just be a casual fan of almost anything. I have to go full out. And I'm like, give me the extras. Give me this. Let me read up on this. Let me watch that. And I just went all in. And started playing in September, and I'm going to rattle off my resume. I think I'm doing okay. I've done, I completed all of last year's vendor, seasonal stories. So I played through all four seasonal stories, reset all those vendors, done every dungeon, done three raids, done GMs. And I did solo one dungeon, and I think that's as far as two seals, and yeah, I'm damn proud of it. And I've just gone ham since starting to play. So that's as braggadocious as I'm going to get. It all goes back to Mellow now, but yeah, man, it's been deep ever since.
Did you really say you were a baby in Destiny a few minutes ago? I'm having some doubts here. You're a pro.
I'm trying.
I haven't even done a solo dungeon, and I've been playing this game for almost a
jump. Jump into Shattered Throne after the show tonight. You'll do it in 30 minutes. You got this.
I might have to. Now I'm being called out and challenged, so I may have to try the occasion. We will see, Guardians. But that's awesome. That's really great. And what got you interested in checking out Destiny? It's been around for so many years now, and Plunder was during the Witch Queens. That was last year, right? So I'm curious, why now?
Well, because as far as it wasn't anything about, you know, that season or even Witch Queen, which I remember hearing about last year because I worked with one or two companies that did some promotion when Witch Queen was being launched. And I was like, oh, everybody seems really hyped about this. I'm aware of this Destiny game, but like I said, kind of tried it once, was overwhelmed and put it back to the side. But I owe a lot to, like I said, a couple of friends who were just like, hey man, try it out, play through one of the campaigns. And like I said, I'll play it with you and see what you think. And man, like I said, this time around, after just having a little bit of patience, like I'll say that new player experience can be a lot, but if you do kind of just put your head down and get into it, and if you are getting into the lore, really helped me, because I'm not somebody who just plays games to play games. Like I don't just get the serotonin from accomplishment, do this, okay, cool, kill this many people. But that's very mechanical, and to me, I get emotionally involved. I want to know these characters, so seeing the depth of backstory and the storylines and the expansions and everything, the entire world that was woven by Bungie over the last better part of the last 10 years, I was like, whoa, this is very cool. And then so that's what I mean got me there. And then I think it blended what I was looking for. So previously I had never been a competitive gamer or even an online gamer. I've been a single player Charlie my whole life, right? Before we went live, we talked, I was a Final Fantasy kid. You know, I was sitting in my basement, single player games, RPGs, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. When online gaming became super mega popular, it always intimidated the crap out of me because people are always so damn good at video games. And I'm like, I'm not going to go into these lobbies and just get wrecked. And whatever it was, Halo, Call of Duty, it intimidates me. So then even MMOs was the same thing. It's a lot. You have to party up with people. I don't know. Like a lot of people do. You have a little bit of anxiety over that. But after I started to get a little bit into PvP games, big into Overwatch, I still am and stuff like that. What I loved about Destiny was I loved FPS. So boom, that was very cool. But it had an MMO sized world. Story, character, quest, cool. And then despite which I know some people don't always love the state of it, especially right now, but it had a PvP element that was pretty refined, and for the people who really love it, really do love it. So I'm like, wow, here's a game that kind of fulfills anything I want. If I want to vibe out and just kill some trash ads and do some bounties, I can do that and just unwind. If I want to get sweaty in PvP, I can do that. If I want to get some friends together and do some harder end game content, I can do that. Play some story stuff, just play challenge stuff. It literally was like, oh, this fulfills every bit of gamer need that I might have. And I think that's obviously by design, and it works. And so I found kind of a little bit of a video game home within the Destiny universe.
Man, you sound like you've been playing since the beginning, Matt. I'm not going to lie. That's impressive.
I just like the Destiny fan in me is really excited for you to experience Destiny 1, because I think that like there's so many things that that game brought to the table that
I have been trying to log in on my PS5 for the past like 3 weeks. I downloaded it, but I think there's some weird glitch. I keep getting a chicken error anytime I even try to start the game. I know the servers for D1 are always a little funky because it's, you know, because they're not really carrying it, you know, super all over it. But I literally every single time it just gives me that. And so I've heard there's some weird PlayStation, like you have to make a new PlayStation account and it'll jog it. So I still intend to at least maybe try to get in on my PlayStation, play whatever campaign I can on D1. I've watched about 16 different 4-hour story and lore videos. So like I feel pretty well versed in a lot of the stuff, but I would love to play through like some of the D1 campaign stuff and just live through that and see what it's like. Trust me, I'm looking.
It's a treat for sure. Wrath of the Machine is a raid. I'm still waiting for them to bring it into Destiny 2. I know they will eventually.
Could be the reprise this year. You never know.
Maybe. Hopefully. That would be really, really fun. But I think that would be an awesome experience. So Matt, I'm curious, like you've been a gamer for quite some time now, right?
Oh yeah.
How do you balance being a professional wrestler, being on the road so much, and still finding the time to play video games?
So, I mean, for a long time, especially with WWE, when I first started up there and was on the road a lot, you kind of just didn't. And then I met a lovely person named, which many of you, if you're wrestling fans out there, might know, Xavier Woods in WWE, who runs an incredible little outfit called Up Up Down Down, where he introduced his love of video gaming to the world of wrestling. And they did a YouTube channel and all this stuff. And so he started making content backstage at the shows. And so he would have his portable setup. He would have his laptop, portable monitor. We'd plug into a TV and then we'd play goofy little games, competitions. It was really super fun content. And so I kind of started to see like, how did he do it? How did he travel with like his PlayStation and a computer? And I don't know, started giving me ideas and everything like that. And so I started bringing my PS4 on the road a little bit, but that was a little cumbersome. I had a little portable monitor and my PS4, and I would play in the hotels and stuff. But I will say this, man, when the Nintendo Switch dropped, everybody got those. All the boys got those. Me and Randy Orton sitting on the bus in Europe playing Zelda was a very common experience. He's a big gaming fan. He doesn't talk about it a lot, but he is. He's a big Assassin's Creed fan. Shout out Randy. But yeah, so like, dude, half the bus had Nintendo Switches, like when we were on tours and stuff like that. So that obviously game changing consoles. There's a reason it sold so many. But now that I've gotten so into PC gaming. So now I got myself a nice little laptop set up. I bring that with me whenever I go on the road now too.
That's pretty awesome. Yeah, and computers now are so powerful that like you can get a pretty beefy laptop these days.
Oh yeah,
not too much. Yeah, very cool. And now, so going back to wrestling, what got you into wrestling? How'd you get your start in the wrestling world?
I mean, it's, you know, it's not too far removed from, you know, video gaming. What is it? It's living through fantasy. It's vicarious kind of thing. And that's what I loved about wrestling. It was almost like real life video games, real life action movies, right? And I would be remiss if I didn't say that. At the time I started really, really watching, like a lot of us did of my age group, in the Attitude Era, right? The late 90s, early 2000s, stuff like that. And I'll admit it, like I was kind of just caught by the hype because I didn't have cable TV, right, as growing up. So I couldn't watch Monday Night Raw. I didn't know what the hell everybody was talking about when they would come into school on Tuesday mornings and be like, oh my God, did you see what Stone Cold did today? Like, I was like, no, I didn't. I want to. And so it was just like a FOMO thing. I was like, I don't even know much about wrestling. I know my brothers watched it when they were young, but they grew out of it very quickly. So it wasn't really in my household. And I was like, I got to know. And so eventually I found a little like local access show that would show like WWE replays called Shotgun Saturday Night. If anybody ever saw that, it would play on like my local UPN channel or whatever for me, but it would just be like Monday Night Raw highlights and then, you know, an Al Snow match.
I remember that.
Something like that, right? You know, it was kind of like it would get you get they taped a little extra match and then they would just show you clips from the past week. So, and then eventually when SmackDown came to, I believe it was UPN at the time in late 99, was when finally I got access to like a mainstay show on SmackDown. And then eventually my family got cable TV in like 2000. And so from then it was Raw, SmackDown, pay-per-views, stuff like that. And so when I did get my hands on it, figuratively speaking, there wasn't a, you know, grow out of it period like there were for a lot of my friends. You know, by the time they started hitting high school, a lot of them were into sports or into music or whatever they were doing. And I was just like, nope, still in it. Just like I told you how I was with Destiny or with other things that I fall in love with. I just go hard. If it's something I really nerd out about or get into, I want to know everything. How does it work? How are they doing that? What is the deal with this? How did this get started? And it was like that with wrestling and with WWE and stuff at the time. I wanted to know absolutely everything. And so I did that. I just went deeper and deeper and deeper and just never stopped being a fan.
I love that you got your start with your love for wrestling during the Attitude Era, because that was the time when I got into it myself. It was actually 2017 when I discovered wrestling, and I remember there was like a Mick Foley match, and it was so just...
There was like a Kane match, too. It was like really...
And after that, Undertaker. I ended up watching Monday Night Raw. I was fortunate to have cable TV, and I may have gotten in trouble one or two times for ordering pay-per-views. We're not going to talk about that. I was young, you know, my parents paid for it, but I was grounded for a couple days, but, you know, it was worth it.
Isn't it wild thinking now, like with all the streaming services, like now WWE, for example, is on Peacock, and it's so you get everything free with your $5 a month, all their pay-per-views, you get replays of their other shows and everything. And they had their network, the WWE network, for a while for $10 a month. But those pay-per-views, they were like $50 like for every pay-per-view, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, they were not cheap back in the day.
And they were getting even more expensive. I remember, like, towards the end, we were paying like $65 to watch, you know, wrestling. But, you know, it was a great show. It was fun. You know, it was entertainment. And I still remember as a kid coming back home from even my birthday parties. Like, I had to leave my birthday parties early because Monday Night Raw was happening, and I had to go see what Stone Cold was going to do to Vince McMahon. I just had to go see it. And it was some of my fondest moments and memories. And I will never forget the first ever Bad Blood in Your House with HBK and The Undertaker. Ooh. When Kane made his debut. Such a amazing, amazing event. And I've gained a lot of respect for professional wrestling and what you all do in this community to entertain people and make people smile for a little bit and forget the day to day.
Yeah. I mean, and then that's what it's about. And I do appreciate that. I think it's getting more and more of that kind of a response from people as we've gone on. You know, obviously for a long time, there's the big thing. That's why a lot of kids, quote unquote, you know, would grow out of it, is because, you know, it's fake. It's fake, right? I think that word kind of hung in the air low over wrestling for a while, because like, and then eventually, like, because they tried to protect the business for so long and make people believe, which I get. But then I think there was this weird middle period where, like, we weren't, all right, like, we know it's a show, but we're still trying to protect it. And I think when we kind of, and I'd probably get some heat for this from purist fans, but like, when we kind of opened the curtain and kind of fully put it out there, like, hey, this is a show. Like, we script this, we put this together like any other show you watch. I think it started to get a little bit of respect, because then we could finally talk about like what it takes to get in here and to do all these things that these people are doing. We're putting, like I said, like a stunt show on, but there are no stunt doubles. That's always like, to people who are not familiar, I'm like,
our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Imagine a movie or an action movie, right? It's big, it's cheesy, it's explosive, it's over the top, but the performers are doing all of their own stunts all the time. No crash pads, no cuts, no second takes, none of that. It is all live, go, go, go. And yeah, I think we're entering a world where a lot more people are seeing that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, to add to that, like when people say that, oh, wrestling is fake, like there are some matches where you really gain a whole new level of respect for the performers and what they do fighting through injuries. Like I remember when Stone Cold he got injured, he injured his back, and he continued that match. I think it was a WrestleMania match.
I mean, there's been numerous cases of stuff like that. I mean, I've got
Edge get like injured pretty bad too one time before.
I pretty much name a wrestler and they've fought through a match injured. I guarantee you.
Yeah.
It'd be harder to pick someone who's never been hurt in a match and you know, had to finish.
No, that's really well said. And so what is it really like to be a professional wrestler behind the curtains?
I mean, it is, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of travel. There's a lot more to it than I think people understand. Is the biggest thing. We have an old saying is like we don't get paid to wrestle. The wrestlers don't get paid to. They get paid to get up at 4 a.m, catch a flight, land in a town, rent a car, go to the gym, make it to in a building on time, blah, blah, put together stuff. But the wrestling, we do that for free. You know, that's the part you do it because you love it. You being out there in front of the crowd and everything, that's for free. I'll do that for free every day. But they get paid to do all the other BS that they get, you know, they got to go through. But yeah, man, it gives me, I'll say this, it gives me a lot of respect. Obviously for the business, learning more and more about it as I was moving up in the business and learning about it more and more every single year. And that's the thing, you learn something new all the time. It's classic, one of those industries where it's like, if you feel like you know everything, get out. Because you probably shouldn't be here anymore. It's all about just learning and growing every single day. And there was so much more to it than I even as like that nerdy fan who was like, how's it? How do they do this? What do they do? And I was looking everything up, right? I was still learning every single week. And almost even more importantly, looking at what goes on, like you said, behind the curtain, behind the scenes, the army of people, especially for a show the scale of like a WWE show, behind the scenes, the camera guys are some of your best friends. They have to be, because one, they help you out the most. Underrated heroes of professional wrestling, ladies and gentlemen, the camera crew. Get on their good side, they'll make you look like $1 million. Get on their bad side, oh, they cut away when you were doing the coolest thing in the entire match. No. Kind of right? stuff like that. So the production people, the writers that they have there who are scurrying back and forth, getting things approved, changing segments. The biggest thing I learned is living and working on your feet. Man, there is no business or no venture I've been a part of that where you have to be just on your feet, ready to improvise, change things on a dime than pro wrestling. So I'm ready. I will say that to any other production or any other thing I'd ever do, nothing will stress me out after kind of being backstage and having things changed 30 seconds before you walk through the curtain. So it prepares you for a lot.
That's really interesting. And, you know, one thing that comes to mind, I remember I watched the video that you put out talking about how you would go to the arena and you sit there and you wait backstage to see if maybe you'll get that chance to go out and perform. So like, I'm curious, how does that really work? Is that something that is planned months in advance, or is it something that you just like go into the arena and you don't really know if you're going to have a match or not? Like, how does that really happen behind the scenes?
So it depends. When WWE was running like full schedule house shows, we call them, or live events, those are the untelevised shows that you would usually do leading up to like a Monday Night Raw or SmackDown. They would go in. If Monday Night Raw was in Seattle, we might do house shows in Spokane, Portland, and somewhere else, and then finish up on Monday and do Monday Night Raw before everybody goes home. Those shows, you know what you're doing, because those shows are usually, we don't need to change a lot. It's not based on story or anything. Like, it's usually just like, all right, this is the card. It's the same one, usually three nights in a row. Sometimes then it's those same matches two, three weeks in a row. Every time you're on the weekend, those are pretty consistent. You go out there, you change what you want, you have fun. Those, I love those shows. They're so much more relaxed. There's not a big TV production. They're not stressed on time where it's like, you got a commercial break's coming, you got to get out of there, in 10 seconds. Just like, go out there, have fun, have a good match, all that stuff. Those were always so much fun. Television is a different story. TV, you had never had any idea unless you had a writer who you might have been, maybe you were with, were kind of in good terms with. They might be like, hey, at TV, you have this right. And everything is right now, because everything is viable to change the day of the show, in the one of many production meetings. So, but you might get it a little heads up of like, hey, right now they have you doing this segment with this person, blah, 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 blah. But like I said, then day of the show, it could change. And then if you didn't have that in, you go, you show up and, wait to see if somebody comes, grabs you, or if your name shows up on that whiteboard, with the match listing, and then you go and get it done.
Oh, wow. That's really interesting. I didn't realize that it was so spur of the moment where they don't really let you know well in advance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty.
That would definitely require for you to adapt.
Oh yeah, it that is one of again, some of the top tier guys might have weeks or months even laid out to them. Guys who the type of guy who's a buddy with Vince McMahon, right? Your Roman Reigns type guys, your John Cena's, who have that kind of really tight knit with and are the tip top of the company. They might have more input and more like knowledge because everybody's working with them. Like, hey, here's where we're going to have you going into WrestleMania over the next 6 months. Right. But me and, 90% of the rest of the roster, it's week to week.
That's a very, very interesting perspective. I didn't even think about that. Mm-hmm. It's from my perspective. It was like, well, you see the show and it's what you see. So you don't really see a whiteboard and where, you know, things are so last minute. So that's really interesting to learn that. Like, you've been wrestling for over a decade. And I'm curious, like, you've traveled the world for so many years. What was your favorite experience that you can recall from traveling to so many different places? Do you have a favorite place that you've visited?
Oh yeah. And I'm desperately trying to get back there. Japan, man. Ooh, Tokyo. Japan.
Oh, nice.
Okay. I've been very fortunate to have gone to Tokyo 3 times with WWE, and outside of my home of Chicago, and because it's home, it's where I grew up. That Tokyo is my favorite city on planet Earth. There is just something, and maybe there's a little bit of, because there's a little bit of weebage in me, you know what I mean? Again, video game fan, Final Fantasy kid. There's probably a little bit of that. Yeah. Just like, this is where it was born. This is where video games live. Kind of thing. But there's also, I've said this to somebody, there's this strange magic to Japan that has this, especially Tokyo. One, it's just a clean city, man. They know how to take, they are disciplined and organized. They know how to take care. It doesn't feel dirty for a city of millions and millions of people. It feels pretty pristine when you're on the streets of Tokyo. But it's this beautiful mix of like the most advanced technological like city, right? We've all seen the clips of, I believe it's Shibuya Crossing, you know, the people crossing 6 different ways, all the lights, the giant billboards. Akihabara, which is the big arcade district where you see people playing DDR until 4 in the morning going crazy as if it's a job. All that stuff. But then it's also mixed in with like their parks, and like they have this immense spirituality about, you know, whether it's just religion or just like the culture. It's not even like non-denominational. The gardens and the parks and the greenery and the lushness of some of the parts of the city are just all combined in this downtown. I don't know. There's a really, really cool synergy there. And the people are just the most respectful fans in the world from a wrestling perspective, man. They were always very passionate, but very, very kind and respectful, because that's a bedrock of their culture and of their society, which is something sorely missed sometimes stateside amongst some groups of fans. I will not try to paint with too wide a brush, but yeah, over there, it's just, it's very, very cool. And so I love Tokyo.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned Tokyo, because that's one of the places that I really want to visit. It's like on my bucket.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've been a sushi fan since I can remember. Like, and if there's anything that I can eat as often and never get sick of it, it's sushi. I remember, I'm originally from Brooklyn, New York, and back in New York, they had so many sushi places that it was just so abundant that I would eat it like on an almost daily basis. And I always wanted to try the sushi in Japan just for the cultural experience, because I find their culture fascinating and interesting. And curious, are you a sushi fan?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, we're going to get along then. So how is the sushi compared in Japan versus like what we have here in the States? Is it very different? Because I can imagine California maybe some little standards of like
they'll might make it for it, but yeah, generally not. But you know what? I will say this. I have not had sushi in Japan in all those times I went. I had a lot of other amazing food, but I didn't have straight up sushi. Just because, yeah, there was other stuff that restaurants we were going to and everything like that. So I'm with you. I have yet to have an authentic Japanese sushi experience. I've had some incredible noodles, some incredible ramen. One of the things I said I was done bragging. Well, all right, here's one other thing that's kind of bragging about. In Japan, the wrestling culture is very huge and it's very respectful over there. And so there's a long tradition of something called sponsors. If you're a big wrestling fan, you may have heard of this. If you're not, you might be like, what the hell are you talking about? No, I'm not talking about Sony, you know, sending you a controller and you posting a hashtag on your Instagram. No, but a similar idea. Sponsors are these huge, usually well-to-do, well-off wrestling fans in Japan who kind of like sponsor a wrestler, and which that means is like they kind of pick someone who they take a liking to, and they, like I said, they're usually well off, and they'll treat them to like to dinners, and like they'll give them gifts and stuff like that, and the kind of exchange is like, hey, yeah, if you're in town or like after your shows, come hang out with me and my friends or somebody's family. You know, you take pictures, you sign some autographs, but they'll pay for a big old dinner for you and everything like that. And so the guy, especially who were well known in New Japan Pro Wrestling, which is the biggest promotion over in Japan. I remember, so when we went over there, the Good Brothers, which are Luke Gallows and Carl Anderson, were big stars in New Japan, came to WWE. And so when we went back over there for tour, they still had all their old contacts and friends and their sponsors. So they invited the boy. They're like, hey, we got like two more spots. We're going out with an old buddy of ours. Who wants to come? And I was like, sure. So we came in, we went to this little restaurant. They closed it down. This chef made us like Kobe wrapped like asparagus. We had like lobster pulled out of the ocean, thrown on the hot pot right in front of us. Drink whatever you want, like appetizers out the wazoo, Kobe beef, all this stuff just like thrown at you. And it was so good. It was ridiculous.
Oh, that sounds so good. And were there any attractions that you can remember from your trip to Japan that were really memorable and interesting?
I mean, I Xavier Woods. Oh, I forget. So Akihabara, which again, the arcade district, is very cool. It's cool to see like a regular like video game arcade, but it's almost like a club. It's open to the late hours of the night. And like I said, people are there sweating it out on the arcade games. It's their, that's their hobby and everything. But this doesn't exist anymore. But they had real life Mario Kart.
Oh, I heard about that.
But it was a non, it was like, that's, it was amazing. They called it Mario Kart because they legally couldn't call it Mario Kart. So it was like MARICART. Oh, wow. And Xavier Woods found out about it. It's this little place. Basically, it's little mini like go-karts that they would drive you in the streets of Tokyo, the middle of the road. They would lead you on a tour of Tokyo, a driving tour in little, they look like the Mario Kart goat guards. But then they would give you cosplay outfits, and you could put on, you could be Mario, you could be Luigi, you could be Wario, whatever. And so a group of us from WWE went and we did that, and it got banned. It is now illegal. But so we got in under the wire. We had to get international driving licenses before we went on tour, because you that was one of the prerequisites for the carts, is you had to have a valid international driving license. So that was probably one of the coolest things we did. It was cool.
That sounds amazing. Oh, yeah. I wish it was still around, because that would have been just a fun experience. as a Mario Kart fan, I would definitely enjoy that. So on the topic of video games, I'm curious, like, you've been a gaming fan for forever. So what was your first video game that you've ever played?
The earliest memories of sitting down and playing video games has got to be OG Zelda on NES. Just the old side-scrolling pixel, you know what I mean? That my brother, I remember mainly watching my brother play. That's kind of my intro. You know, he's 4 or 5 years older than me. So he kind of was set the tone for me. You know, he got Nintendo, and then he was the one who got Super Nintendo. And he was the one who got PlayStation. And then after that, he kind of faded from video games. And then that's where I was like, then I got PS2 and PS3 and all that stuff. But yeah, the original Zelda, Legend of Zelda on NES was probably my first video game I remember sitting down and playing.
That's pretty epic. So interestingly, I got my start back in the original Nintendo as well, although I didn't really play Zelda back then. I didn't it just wasn't something that I was immediately interested in, but I was more of a Mario fan. But let me tell you, when I played Breath of the Wild for the first time, I realized my entire life I've been missing out on this like incredible game. And I've been in love with Zelda ever since Breath of the Wild. And such an amazing game. I think I picked it up on release day when we got our Nintendo Switch, right, Shadow? Yeah. Such a fun time. So are you excited for the new Zelda game that's coming out? I know we got a new one coming in May.
We do. Yeah. I'll be honest. So like I played Breath of the Wild as well. I think it was mainly because it was the first I got my Switch and it was the first big game. It was a release game, wasn't it? Or very shortly thereafter.
It was a release game.
And so I was like, hell yeah. And I did love the idea of an open world Zelda. Yeah. Cause I love games like Skyrim and of course like Grand Theft Auto, Red Dead, all those kind of things. So I was like, oh, I'll check this one out. But I will say I'm not a hardcore Zelda fiend like some people. Like I played the N64 one, never played Ocarina of Time or Majora's Mask, so I don't know if I'll be super hard into this one. I might give it a try, but like, as you know, I mean, Destiny's a full-time job, so if I'm gonna play something else, I'll probably be something like probably Final Fantasy 16 when it comes out. And then probably, one or two other games as they come out. But Zelda will be kind of like, maybe I'll keep my ear to the ground and see how it's being reviewed and how people are liking it. And maybe I'll dip my toe in. We'll see.
That's very valid. And yeah, Destiny definitely has, a lot of demand with the weekly grind that we have to do. I'll tell you one thing. The one redeeming thing about the Zelda release is that it's coming out on May 12th, and I believe the new season in Destiny doesn't come out for almost 2 weeks thereafter. So we have a little bit of a buffer time to really, dive in. I know me and Shadow Price are very excited for the new Zelda game based on how the previous one was. It was so much fun, so we're definitely excited for that.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And now I'm curious to kind of pivot to your love of creating content. I'm curious, was there anyone who inspired you as a content creator in Destiny 2 who you either look up to or you think does an exceptional job at creating content that inspired your work?
Outside of, so when I first got into streaming and trying to make a little bit of content, which I, like a lot of people, I picked up in the start of the pandemic and everything, like back in 2020, stuck at home. And Xavier Woods, again, I'm shouting him out like 8 bajillion times. He was the one who told me, he's like, hey man, you want to try this Twitch thing? Like a lot of people do it and it's super easy. Like I just started, my first stream was PS4 camera, headset, and that's it. You know what I mean? I stream directly from the PlayStation just to give it a shot. And it has now grown into this gigantic thing in front of me right now. But so he was the one who kind of got me into just making content in general. And then the other games I would try to play or try to main at, I did find content creators, but I'll say, interestingly enough, Destiny, while I've found some since, was not one of the games that were like, I saw somebody streaming it or TikToks or YouTube. And I was like, oh, I want to get into this. I found all that later. So I wasn't really drawn in by content creators. I go back to more of my friends and they invited me into their Discord. And like I said, they played through the game with me. And then like, I started doing group activities with them. So I kind of credit my friends and who are now my clanmates. Shout out to the Bread Gang. Who kind of got me into just wanting to do it. I had already been creating content. I did a lot of Overwatch for about a year prior to this one, year and a half. And so I just kind of continued that on, but then just kind of switched games ever so slyly or not so slyly. And from there. But as far as kind of getting into the meat and potatoes of the game, I credit my friends. I credit my fellow Guardians.
Love that. And, you know, Destiny is a game that is made to be enjoyed with friends. So it's perfect match. And it's interesting because Shadow Price was the person who got me into games. So it was kind of a similar thing where it wasn't necessarily a specific content creator that got me into the game. Although I will say there were a few podcasts way back in the day. Guardian Radio.
Yeah, the original Planet Destiny podcast.
DCP was one of them. And I think
Fireteam Chat.
Planet Destiny podcast. And then also Fireteam Chat. They were our go-to for a long time.
Either last year or year before.
Was last year? So that was definitely a fun experience. But it's been so awesome to be able to, you know, find our passion for gaming in this awesome universe and this community. It's been an awesome, awesome ride. And now, so going back to your wrestling, I'm curious, were there any challenges that you had to overcome?
I mean, every day, right? I mean, it's such a physical business. And getting back to kind of what I said earlier, it's being ready to change on a dime, whether it's 30 seconds before you go through the curtain and they go, hey, you know, that 10 minute match you're about to go out and have, it's now 5 minutes. Go tell the other guy, cause he's already out there. And you're like, oh, okay. And you have to be able to get it done. Now you have to think about, all right, what do I have to, what you're editing in your head, because you're like, all right, we laid out this and this. Now it's time to improv, cut this literally as you're walking to the ring, showboating and all that stuff. Though that kind of thing, to even to the point where that same exact thing will happen mid-match. Because the referees of earpieces, they'll go, okay, you just lost 2 minutes. Or, oh, shoot, now the other guy's winning. Change it up. Okay. And you just go, okay. So just rolling with things like that. And then, of course, again, like we also mentioned, injuries. Man, I tore my pec in a match, and not even a televised match, an untelevised live event in NXT before I was even up on the WWE main roster. Luckily, not a full tear, but it was a partial tear of my left pec. Tore it just as we were, luckily, in the final stretches of the match. But I still had to wrestle another 2-3 minutes on after just feeling this hot zip go. I thought I tore my bicep. It just went down from my shoulder down into my bicep. And I was like, oh, son of a bee. Oh, you got to be kidding me. Kind of just held my arm close to me, finished the match, and then went back and kind of let me stay home a few days. And then we came back, swelling went down. And yeah, it turned out I had some damage to my pec. And it has not been the same ever since, because I was stubborn. And when I did, luckily, I did get full range of motion back, and I was like, oh, I feel okay. I don't need surgery or anything like that. Let's go. Look, see, I'm fine. Let me back. I probably could have used a little bit of orthopedic surgery on my pectoral tendon there. It is now, there's like a weird divot, and I can't do as many push-ups as I used to. And or bench press at all, because it just hurts my shoulder. So. But that's luckily, knock on wood, that's the worst injury I ever had. And honestly, in the scheme of things, considering all the things we've done in that ring, it's pretty minor. So I'm pretty thankful.
Well, we're glad you're, you know, safe, and that you didn't, you know, have any more serious injuries that were more life-threatening. And thank you for sharing that. So going back to WrestleMania 34, I know that you had a
match indeed
with Rusev. And I wanted to learn more about that, because I remember WrestleMania 34, like I watched WrestleMania 34. And I'm curious, how was the experience like to, one, be a part of WrestleMania? Like, after being in this career for such a long time to finally get to that pinnacle? Like, what was that like?
I mean, it's people say it all the time, man. There is, especially if, I think if you come and watch it from any position, like whether you're a fan or not, if you sit down and just see the spectacle of it, it's like, damn. But if you're obviously a fan of this business, it is, nobody does it like that, man. It is a spectacle of spectacles. And to be a part of it, even a small part of it like that, was very, very, very cool. Very, not overwhelming. I was just excited, man. It was just so freaking cool to be out there in front of 65,000 people. Just the, you know, every eye on you, people chanting along with you, having an act, having a persona and a gimmick, whatever you want to call it, that we had going at the time that people were so into that they're literally like, they're out there vibing, chanting along with you, is such a cool experience. And I got to have a little extra special experience that night because I performed twice. Because on the kickoff show to WrestleMania at the time, they were doing the big Andre the Giant Battle Royal, which they kind of throw everybody in. And I was in that. And I, at the time, I had a full head, I say sarcastically, because I was losing my hair, hence this action, where I got eliminated from that, went backstage, had my head shaved and changed all of my gear for me to come out about an hour later for Rusev's match for the US title that night. So it was kind of like this character and like both physical and a little bit of like a character change literally happening over the course of one night. So that was a fun little like Easter egg thing for me. Cause like you literally saw me with like this weird medium length black, like dark brown hair at the beginning of the night. And then all of a sudden I'm coming out completely different outfit, totally shaved head, everything. And it has been that way ever since.
That's so cool. Wow. And do you have a favorite feud that you were a part of through your career?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's little nuggets of everything. I got to give a soft spot for my first like real feud in NXT in kind of on WWE TV, which was our NXT at the time. After I debuted the Drama King character, I had a nice little, it was kind of a short run with Big Cass, who's W Morrissey, in Impact and now on AEW, but he was with us in NXT. He's one of my buddies going way back, in this business. And we had a really fun little rivalry on NXT. And that was like my first kind of like storyline, if you will. And we had a sing off that was super fun. And it was the first time we had done anything like that on NXT. And, a lot of people still remember that. So that was super fun. And in the tag team division, man, when we won the tag titles, we won them from a team called Blake and Murphy, who, again, is Buddy Murphy, who has gone on to now AEW. He's with the House of Black. And then Wesley Blake, who has gone on, I believe he's doing some coaching now at the Performance Center, if I do remember correctly. But just two incredibly fun and easy guys to work with. And oh, so that story was fun going into it with Alexa Bliss just slapping the piss out of us every week on TV. And, but those guys were like, they were the perfect heel tag team, man. They made us look so good. I am so ever appreciative of those guys. Especially for us who had such a weird character, weird gimmick, like, man, that could have easily been dead in the water. But when you have guys like that helping you look good and like just making the matches so much more fun and dynamic, it was really incredible. So those two stick out to me. And then anytime I could lace up with the Usos and the New Day was just magic. They're so good. They're so good. So much fun.
As the Usos. Oh, I remember them. They were so charismatic.
They're not like hardcore like a lot of us, but like they'll join the up, down, down. Somebody puts a controller in front of them. Hell yeah. Yeah.
And now I know that you made some pretty big changes through your career. In August of 2022, you made an announcement that you would no longer be accepting wrestling bookings. And you would be focusing on color commentary. And I'm curious, what prompted that change and what was it like to leave the ring?
So it's weird. Well, first off, this is wrestling. If you've been watching for more than 5 minutes, you know, never say never. And of course, I'll put that. I'm still, you know, relatively young and still healthy. So I'm, you know, I'm not beat up, none of that stuff. But it was a weird transition from WWE. So, you know, got released in the middle of the pandemic, like with a bunch of people. You know, if you are a wrestling fan, you saw there was a ton, over 100 cuts over the course of that year. In their cost cutting measures. And so getting, I was at that time, I was already doing commentary for the better part of the last year of my time in WWE. So getting released from WWE as a commentator immediately, you know, you're not thrown into a lot of people's wrestling minds. So I don't think I was being thought of as a wrestler too much. And then also being in the middle of a pandemic when nobody's running events. So it was like, that's where streaming content came in, man, because nobody was doing anything. So I was looking for things to occupy my time. But then after that, I mean, I fell in love with that side of the business in WWE. I credit great people like my current broadcast partner, Tom Hannafin, who was kind of like my supervisor at the time. People like Vic Joseph and Nigel McGuinness for guiding me as well, really helped me fall in love with it. And so then when Impact came along and New Japan Pro Wrestling came along, both of which I started off wrestling, but it was very quickly, I would be asked by management of both of those companies, like, hey, would you do commentary for us for this show? Hey, do you mind jumping in on commentary for this? Hey, we had this idea where you could do comment. And so I think when that started happening, there was a little bit of one of those, like, life is showing you something kind of things, you know, those moments where it's like, hey, I never want to be one of those people who's banging on the door when there's a window open. Kind of metaphors, you know what I mean? Like, I think the universe is showing you something. So, like, I just leaned into that. And so I started taking that. And then between that and, like, because I was doing that more and more, I think, you know, I wasn't getting booked to wrestle as much, which I was like, I understood. And so when you get out of practice in the ring, it's hard to get back into it. Not that I couldn't if I really, you know, if a big opportunity came along, but it was like, man, it's not like you can just step out of the ring for a month. And then if somebody has you in a match, you're good to go. Like, oh, okay. No, man, like that cardio goes very quickly. And so, it's like to keep wrestling, you've got to be wrestling all the time. And, so I started kind of just leaning into that. It kind of followed the universe, followed the feeling. And, there's something really nice about it. Cause you know what? I could do this for another 20 years. You know what I mean? Like I'll tell you, I don't think I could wrestle for another 20 years. So I just kind of started leaning into it. And I think it allows me a little bit more time and a little bit more flexibility to do extra things, like whether it is content or voice acting, for example, or outside projects. So I like that freedom as well.
You know, the one thing I've realized as we've been talking is that I learned something about you. And it's that you see things as opportunities. Not as like, oh, I have to like pivot and change, right? Like you were saying in one of your videos how you saw color commentary as an opportunity to try something new as a way to advance your own abilities and what you're able to offer, right? And it's really cool from your experiences with even like going from Overwatch to Destiny to becoming a content creator in this game. It seems like you're always evolving.
I mean, you got to. I mean, you got to be, like I said, you got to be fleet-footed, man. And you got to adapt, or else you'll get left behind. You'll. And I still have trouble with it in different regards. But man, I mean, I try to, like, don't get me wrong. I've been there like anybody else. I get down. I have had those moments where it's like, you do feel hard-headed and stubborn. I'm like, no, I don't want this to be this way or whatever. I want to fight against this or whatever. But I think more often than not, man, life is much easier if you, and this isn't to say just like, it's whatever and go, you know, I'm just going to do whatever and not care or whatever. It's try for the things you want, but man, yeah, don't overlook a lot of opportunities. There's a lot of people who I've seen because they're too laser focused in on one thing or one result or whatever, that it's like, you missed an entire opportunity to grow this business, this sector of your life, this relationship, whatever it is, because you were like, no, I'm doing this. I have to have this and I have to have XYZ result. And if I don't have that, I won't be happy. And I don't like that. I don't like being that narrow focused because I feel like you're just going to miss out on so much. So everything is truly is an opportunity.
Very well said. Very.
That is well said. Wise words for sure. And Matt, I know that you had some really amazing experiences through your wrestling career, and one of them was to be featured in a major WWE video game, WWE 2K19, as Aiden English. And I'm curious, what is the process like to transform into a character in a video game? How was that like, and what things can you share with us about that process and experience?
Yeah, that, I mean, there's being in wrestling, there was two huge, I mean, there's multiple, we talked about WrestleMania stuff, but as to the inner geekdom, you know, that a lot of us have, there's two huge bucket list things. One is an action figure made of you, and two, being in a video game. And I've been lucky enough, again, I was never some huge top star, right? But I've been lucky enough to have that happen multiple times over in either department. I think, yeah, I was in a few of the 2K games, and then I've had three action figures, and I keep them up on my wall or whatever. When I look at it, I always try to have that perspective, like, man, that was freaking cool. And but the video game thing is very cool, man. The more interesting thing, especially for wrestling, because it is so physical, right? The motion capture, I've always wanted to do that. I never did, but they would often have independent wrestlers out in California at the 2K studios do that. You know, they would get in a ring, and they would get crash pads and stuff like that, and perform all these moves in motion capture gear. And it's very, very cool process in as far as that goes. But getting to do, like, I believe when I was doing the Drama King thing that was featured in, when NXT first started getting featured in the game, I sang an intro. I had to go into the recording booth and sing the intro for my character that was going to be animated into me walking out with the microphone and singing and everything like that. It was super, super cool. I'd never gotten to do anything like that, right? Like, step into a studio and record audio for a video game. They came in and they took pictures of, you know, every bit of your gear. You to stand there, you know, arms at your side. They're going to get you from head to toe. Turn your boot to the side. Turn your boot to the right, to the left. You know, put your hands up, put your hands down, arms up. They want to see every little, like, they got my weird shaped belly button in there, man. Like, like they really, the details, even when sometimes it's not always like picture perfect, but like the details they get are really, really cool. So yeah, I mean, like, there wasn't many, because usually it was just, I didn't have any, especially the games at that time didn't have you doing, they didn't have voiced lines like in the story modes or anything. And maybe from people, again, like your John Cena's or like Seth Rollins or something. But for the most of the roster, you didn't, I think it was just like text speech. But my particular entrance, I was singing, right? So I did have to go into the booth to do my entrance, because, you know, you're not just going to fake my weird Kermit the Frog voice. No, you got to get that from the source. So I went in and I did record that.
And how long did that take to like from start to finish?
Well, I mean, I don't know. So like I said, I've never done the mocap. WWE guys never did their own mocap. They would outsource usually independent wrestling talent to go do that in LA, wherever the studio was. For us, I'm trying to remember the timeline. We would do, whether if we needed audio, and then, like I said, like the pictures, like literally like photographing you with a billion cameras up and down. They would probably have, you know, because the game would come out in the fall. They would probably have us start doing that in the beginning, like that year's game, probably early in the year, like February-ish. But like that, literally, that's all I had to do was stand there while they take picture and video of you so they can animate it. And okay, cool. It took 10 minutes. We did it literally at a Monday Night Raw. Hey, go upstairs into this office. They're doing video game stuff. Okay. Go up there, do all the poses. They take all the pictures. Then you go back down and put your match together. So,
that's so cool.
Video games. Then you hear nothing about it for the next 6 months until the game releases. So
That's awesome. You know, for some reason, I thought it was a much more in-depth process that took maybe like months or...
I mean, it does, but just not from the talent side. From the talent side, they just capture you, whatever they need from you, and then off you go.
It's really cool. It sounds like you've had the coolest job. You get to travel the world, wrestle, eat amazing food, and be part of a video game. That's the dream.
I've been very, those are those kind of things that even when I have my lowest moments, I always try to have that perspective of that. And I, you know, it's funny, literally right before this, somebody had DM'd me. I don't know if it was here on Twitter or Instagram or something, talking about, they remember in 20, maybe 17, they were at the Allstate Arena in Chicago, which is where I'm from. And my dad had a friend who had a booth, like a skybox there. So like when WWE come to town, he would hit up his friend, and him and my mom and cousins sometimes would go, and they would come watch the pay-per-view or SmackDown or whatever it was. And of course, sometimes they would be sharing the skybox with other friends of this guy or whatever like that. And so this person happened to be in the skybox with my parents, and I came up there and I'd said hi to them and everything like that. And then I had to go back to the locker room. And this guy messaged me a Reddit post that he had made after that. It was like, Hey everybody. Like, I was just at SmackDown and I sat in a skybox with Aiden English's parents, and his dad told me, and I didn't know this. My dad never told me this. He must've like said, oh, hey, you're Aiden English's dad or whatever. And he said, I'm just so proud of him. And I know that even if he, you know, left it all here tonight and left it all behind, he would be happy because he lived his dream. And this random guy on Reddit had this quote from my dad that I had never heard. And that's the exact kind of mentality I try to, don't get me wrong, I am ambitious. I've got so many different things I want to keep doing. It doesn't mean I'm like, you know, done, but I can look back very happily at my life, no matter what happens next.
Love that. That's such a amazing outlook to have in life. And it definitely is something that we all should strive to be more like. So thank you for sharing
your
incredible stories and everything that you've done. So a few more things about your career in wrestling. I know that you're currently working with Impact Wrestling. And I was always curious, like, going from one wrestling organization to another, is it very different culturally or how your day-to-day is?
So it's funny, there is a whole lot different, but there's so much at the same, because at the end of the day, it's wrestling, and it, you know, it's a wrestling TV show. The scale is different. The crew is different and everything like that. But at the end of the day, what are we doing? We're making a TV show with bombastic characters who fight in that squared ring, you know, in the middle of an arena, going through storylines. It's, you know, that's the same from New Japan Pro Wrestling to AEW to Impact to WWE, to anybody, to any independent wrestling promotion out there. We're all doing the same thing. So it's just flavors of ice cream after that, you know. But so obviously, yeah, WWE is the scale is huge. And we're talking about multi-billion dollar company. And so the Impact is a smaller scale, but man, I will tell you, the atmosphere and the environment and the crew, I've never had a better, like, just environment to be in wrestling. The closest I could imagine was when we were in NXT and it was first getting hot and really being cool in like 2014, 2015. That kind of mentality was like, hey, we're all a crew. We're all in this together. We're all just getting out there trying to make the best damn show we can. Make everyone else notice us. That's the vibe I get in Impact. And on top of that, not throwing shade, but like the least like sharky locker room and like staff. Cause in especially when you're at a company that's so big, there's a lot of, you hear about politics and people jockeying for this, that, and the other, especially when the company's that big. But man, at Impact, from the boss, Scott D'Amore, who is who does not act like a boss. And Scott, if you ever see this, I don't know why you'd be watching a Destiny show, but if you ever do, doesn't act like a boss. He's there. He's down on the floor with you. He's not hiding away in an office. So from him down again, down to our production assistants and camera guys and everything, everybody is in on this mission together. So I I've loved more than anything in my time here in Impact. And it's just been, it's been really, really great.
I definitely feel that. Like I've watched Impact Wrestling several times throughout the last, I would say, three months or so. And every time that I tune in, there's like a level of excitement and energy and just passion for this industry. And it's so cool to experience that. And you all are doing amazing things with Impact Wrestling. So best of luck in that journey. And
I appreciate
that. Can't
wait
to see everything that you do. So we have a couple of Guardians who also love wrestling as much as we do. And we had a question from one of our community members. And the question was, what is the best advice that you could give someone who is aspiring to become a pro wrestler?
And this, I actually just had this question. I was at a show the other week and somebody asked that. And, you know, I get this question a lot. That's what a lot of people want to know. And it, man, I'm not big on getting too in the weeds with advice, because I think everybody's journey is different. And I think there's a lot of also old timers in our business who, all due respect in the world to them, have a very shallow mind of like, all right, well, here, kid, this is how the business should be. Don't do this, do this. I hate that. Is it number one? It's entertainment. This business is changing all the time, just like video games and everything. We're evolving and changing. And so, like, I'm not going to sit here and tell you how to wrestle. What I will say is more general advice, and man, it's twofold. One, there is still something to say when you're brand new in any venture. This just goes beyond, you know, wrestling. It's pretty classic. It's kind of mouth closed, ears open. This isn't to say, I always qualify with this. This isn't to say, like, just do whatever anybody tells you. You know, you still are a sentient person with your own thoughts and feelings, but when you're new, you should really just be soaking it all in. Be a sponge. You will eventually, in time, learn to filter and see what feels right and what feels wrong, and, you know, what's good for you and what you're trying to do and stuff like that. But at the start, take everything in. Just take it all in. Sponge it all up, and be very respectful and that kind of thing. Two, learn from someone who's made a living in this business. Would be, as far as like, where should I go learn to wrestle? I don't think you need to go. If you can go to Black and Brave and learn from Seth Rollins, great. He obviously one of the best in the world currently at what we're doing at an extremely high level. You don't have to do that though. But do I think you should give your money to Steve, who's wrestled once a month at his local independent in whatever town, who's never made like a living? I that's one thing I might be a little harsh on, but I'm like, it could be a small time, somebody who's made a job of this, who's been able to pay some bills with this, because they've obviously found a formula to get booked, to get better, to get a little bit of success there. So I think learning from someone who's made it, again, does not have to be some big time WWF star, but learn from somebody who's been able to make a career of some kind, even if it's a part-time career, but somebody who's been able to make a job out of this, because they're going to be able to give you the best advice. And then lastly, take care of your body, get in shape. That does not mean be a bodybuilder. We are not in that industry anymore. This is not 1980. You don't need to be 250 pounds juiced up to the gills. No, sir. But I don't care what you look like. I don't care if you're tan, if you're not. I don't care if you're a heavy set or not. I don't care if you're skinny or not, but you need to be in shape to do what we do. And that takes a lot of physicality. We talked about that tonight. Just takes a lot of cardiovascular health, strength to perform and take care of your opponent. Cause that's the other thing. We're not trying to hurt each other. Safe and spectacular, everybody. You know what I mean? So you need to have the strength and the wherewithal and the athleticism to protect yourself and your opponent. So get in shape. You don't need six-pack abs, but you need to be able to physically, at a high level, do what we do. So yes, that's going to mean getting in the gym. It's going to mean going to training, running drills, things like that to keep your body in the physical shape and just to keep it up so you can prevent as much injury as possible. So those are my three pillars. You know, listen as much as you can at first, train from someone reputable, and take care of your body.
That's awesome. I love that. Definitely. Those are truly awesome words of wisdom right there, I would have to say.
And I mean, like I said, yeah, I think it goes for, you could, with a little bit of tweak, you can do that for almost any industry. I mean, again, is listen, you know, choose your elders or, you know, your mentors wisely, and then whatever your particular tool is, take care of it. I think that, you know, that can go almost to any industry. I think it's kind of universal.
Yeah, definitely. Would you say like that would also help like people trying to be good on the mic? Because obviously not everybody is great on the mic at first and everything.
Sure. It's a little harder, you know what I mean? Because it's a little bit more intangible, right? I can teach you how to take a flat back bump and properly and safely and effectively do a headlock or a suplex. I can kind of teach that to anybody with enough time. You can't teach confidence and you can't teach charisma. You can guide it and you can help people bring it out. But there are going to be some people who, man, that is just not a natural instinct. And there are people who have gotten better, but that's just one of those things, I think, just with time in front of a microphone, in front of a camera, getting, if you're a shy person, getting less and less shy, getting more and more just willing to throw it all out there. The one thing I'll say, I always say to people as far as that and being the persona and being, especially in something like wrestling, a big bombastic showbiz thing, kind of like that, or even if you're going to try streaming, I always say go more. I think it's way harder to pull more out of you as a performer. Like, it's so much harder for me to go like more, like loud, like louder, more energy, more emotion. I'd rather you go so over the top and have someone go, a coach, a boss, somebody go, all right, tone it, dial it back. You'd much rather do that than the opposite. So if you're trying to work on your promos, work on your mic, just keep doing it. Repetition, get more and more comfortable speaking. And then just go as all out as you're able to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's really great advice. Very, very well said. So Matt, I'm curious, what is next for you in your journey, and what are some personal projects that you're excited about?
Well, I mean, it's honestly, I'm in this weird state right now where it's kind of like, I went through a couple changes with like some of the content stuff. So like now in this kind of like status quo, like just maintain, let's figure out the next move. I just started doing, see, I told you, late to the game. I'm not good at always adapting. Just started doing TikTok stuff like really consistently. And so I'm doing more of that. Just fun, goofy Destiny TikTok stuff. You're not coming to me for builds, folks. Okay. There's enough of those guys. You're coming to me to laugh at my stupid stuff that I do and that I say. So that, like, doing just more fun stuff like that. One of my big goals in wrestling is I would like, and I've talked to Kevin Kelly over at New Japan, I would like to maybe, speaking of getting back there, I've done a lot of their US shows because they have a US presence, but I would like to get over to Japan to call a tour or a series of shows on commentary for their Japanese home audience. So that's kind of one of my next projects I'd love to be able to do. I don't know how that would balance with my commitments to Impact, but I'm in the process of trying to like work out like, hey, when are they on tour? When do we have a large break in tapings and stuff like that? So that's one of my kind of goals for the next year or so, is to try to get one of those in.
Very cool. And we will definitely be looking out for all of your upcoming projects and endeavors. And we will also make sure to include all of your links in the show notes for this episode.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. Thank you for letting me.
Team tonight, and thank you so much for joining us, Matt. Thank you so much for being with us on the show. Thank you for sharing your stories and your experiences and your journey in Destiny and wrestling. We appreciate you so much for joining us tonight.
Oh my God. No, again, thank you for having me. Absolute pleasure to hang with you guys. And hopefully not the last time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And Matt, where can the Guardians learn more about you and what you do in the community?
I keep it pretty simple. Drama King Matt is kind of my handle on everything. Twitch, Drama King Matt, Instagram, Twitter, same, as well as TikTok. And I'm trying to get TikTok up there. So that's the big one I'm funneling people to. I want to try a little bit of co-streaming on there and Twitch if I can get the opportunity. So go check out the TikTok and come laugh at my poor platforming and but awesome fashion. I look good when I fall down numerous pits. So I do have that going for me. So yeah, come hang out with me and the Drama Club. And we have a nice little budding Destiny community as well. So if you're looking for like-minded people, come hang out.
I like that, Drama Club. I like that. And we'll definitely have
to hell yeah.
Check that out and share that with our community and our Guardians. And thank you so much for being with us.
No, thank you guys.
Such an honor. And Shadow Price, where can we learn more about you and what you do?
You can find me on Twitter at ShadowPrice79 and also here on the Destiny Show podcast every Friday night.
And Guardians, you can find the Destiny Show podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. We're on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, and every major platform. You can find us on the web at destinyshow.com. You can find us right here on twitch.tv/thedestinyshow every Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. And Guardians, you can also find us over on Twitter, where we give you the latest updates on all things Destiny 2 Lightfall. And make sure to join our Destiny 2 community on Discord. We are on fire. We have a clan of over 600 Guardians, and we are growing every single week. So we hope you join us, Guardians. And we thank you for joining us for another incredible episode of the Destiny Show podcast. Thank you all for tuning in. Go play some Trials, go play some Grandmaster Nightfalls, and Guardians, thank you for joining us tonight, and we will see you starside. Good night, Guardians.
Bye-bye.